Blog Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Gangeesh with the Pettawitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. You guys know the drill by now. Every Thursday at 2 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how to make that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in or chat, and we're happy to include you in the dialogue. Now, before I introduce our guest, I would like to take just a moment to define the term revenue marketer. Some of you are probably sick of this by now, but we have so many new listeners every week. I'd like to take just a few seconds to do that. So a revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer who has revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. They are completely responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they are sales ready. And they all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice and to get those real revenue results. And the great thing about this show is it's not a show where I bring on experts to tell you what you should be doing. This show is all about bringing on revenue marketers who are exactly where you are right now, and they're here to share their journeys, their successes, and their gotchas so that your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and smoother. Now, today, I'm just so pleased to introduce Jenny Koop. I met Jenny a few years ago at an event, and we've kept in contact, and she's had a fabulous career in marketing. So let me give you a little bit about her background, and then we'll begin to talk to Jenny and find out what she does. First of all, Jenny is the Director of Worldwide Demand Generation at LogLogic. She's a very process-driven and results-oriented individual with a history of launching successful, buyer-centric, love that word, demand generation programs, and she has over 16 years of B2B marketing experience in the Silicon Valley. Now, she's held various roles as Director of Worldwide Marketing at many successful startups, as well as for some larger companies like Indion, formerly known as Healthion WebMD. And during her tenure there, she was a key member of the marketing team and helped grow the company to the largest e-health company, approaching $1 billion in annual revenues with over 8,000 employees and several billion dollars in market capitalization. So, Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start by telling us a little bit about LogLogic and your role there.
You bet. So we are a startup. We are about a team of six members in marketing. I report directly into the chief marketing officer, and we have a product marketing person, and we have a person who is doing PR, and then everything else sort of falls on my plate. So I have a few contractors that I use for what I like to call heavy lifting, but the entire lead generation, lead management, and ultimately demand creation falls on me.
So, Jenny, let me ask you, because sometimes people get the idea that you've got to have a really large team to be effective in lead generation, demand generation, and it sounds like you've got a pretty lean team there. So how would you respond to that?
Yeah, I think it does depend on your marketing objectives, but you'd be surprised with all the tools and automation that marketing has evolved over the past 3 years. It's really enabled companies to trim their team and get a lot done with maybe one or two individuals because we can now automate processes and automate campaigns where before you needed a body to actually make sure something happened. And so, again, with technology, it's really enabled me to get a lot more done with less people.
Okay, and I absolutely agree, and I see that every single day. And, again, for anyone using a sophisticated marketing automation systems, it really does allow a small team to act like a really big team. But Jenny, that's kind of like the your organization that you've got. But tell us a little bit more about kind of what you're exactly responsible for at LogLogic.
Absolutely. So I'm responsible for bringing in a certain lead number every quarter. I'm also responsible for managing the entire lead life cycle. So bringing leads into Salesforce.com, which is our CRM. We are responsible for the entire mechanics and process for our marketing automation system, which we use Eloqua here. I've used other systems, which I'll talk about, in a little bit, but we are an Eloqua shop here at LogLogic. And I've also got numbers around pipeline. Marketing is actually tasked with a certain percentage of the pipeline. We need to actually report every quarter that we have touched a certain percentage of the pipeline and also touched a certain percentage of the opportunities and a certain percentage of the closed deals. So we're very metrics-driven here. We do some reporting out of Eloqua, some reporting out of Salesforce. But ultimately, at the end of the day, my boss comes to me with an operations report every quarter, and we have to show that marketing has contributed to the bottom line.
That is really interesting, this metrics focus that you have. And again, when you take a look at revenue marketers, people responsible for lead, these are typical kinds of metrics. But it seems to me, Jenny, this is a pretty sophisticated bunch of metrics. How long have you been at LogLogic, and was this the first time you had been doing this, or had you done it at a past company? Because the metrics that you're tracking are very sophisticated.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think this is a pretty mature marketing organization from what we're measuring and what we're tracking. One reason why I took the position here is I felt like the company was at a certain state in their marketing automation and their marketing development. And there was an opportunity for me to come on board and sort of take it to the next level. I'd been at previous companies who were doing this sort of in part, but there wasn't a sort of holistic approach to this. And I felt like all the pieces were here, and they just needed somebody to come on board, put a little structure behind it, and, you know, up the game a bit and take it to the next level. So I was fortunate enough to have a platform in place that I could utilize, and it was just a matter of, you know, getting a little more out of the system than what they were currently doing today.
So were you specifically hired, or was part of the hiring criteria the fact that you had been doing lead management before, and that was an element that this company was very interested in?
Yeah, I think they were very tactically focused. They were using their marketing automation system primarily as a batch and blast type of application, and they wanted somebody to come on board and take a more strategic approach, implement things like lead scoring and lead nurturing, dedicated lead nurturing tracks for specific vertical markets, automating things like a lead sweep initiative, which I'll talk about, and really, again, up the game. I had been at a previous company, and I was doing some of this with a different marketing automation system, but quite frankly, was limited by some of the functionality and scalability of that platform. So I was pleased to hear that this company was using Eloqua, because I really felt like Eloqua had a lot of the bells and whistles that would enable me to do some of the things that I wanted to do. And then secondly, I was happy to hear that I had resources. In this case, I do have a contractor 20 hours a week who I use to, again, do a lot of the heavy lifting so that I can really stay more in a strategic role and really kind of provide a holistic and strategic approach to this. And don't get me wrong, I've been in the weeds. I've been that hands-on person. I owned other marketing automation platforms in the past where I was that individual. I was the one sitting in front of the computer and actually building campaigns and building emails. So I understood what it took, but they really felt that my value, since I had done sort of both ends of it, was a strategic approach and really enabled the company to get the most out of the tool.
And I completely agree. You know, having known you for a while, I think that's the perfect place for you because, again, you do have such a background, and you have seen it from every single end. And, again, everybody, Jenny is the kind of marketer who can really take advantage of the more sophisticated functionality in a tool like Eloqua. And, again, you'll find that as you build any kind of demand generation practice, it goes through phases. Don't you agree with that, Jenny? You kind of start a beginning phase, and you learn, and then you improve, and then you use more functionality, and it just kind of builds on itself.
Yeah, it's certainly an iterative approach, and I think it's designed that way. I certainly don't regard this as any, there's a term in the Valley called set and forget, and it's certainly not anything along those lines. It's a living and breathing thing that kind of grows organically, and if you don't give it, you know, the care and feeding that it needs, you're not going to get out of it what you expect to get out of it. And so we're constantly revisiting content, the cadence of our emails, how we're scoring leads, who we are segmenting for which particular email track that they're on. So it's quite frankly 30 to 40% of my job in some way or another that I'm either diagnosing, changing, or auditing in some way. And you really need to give it that care and feeding. Otherwise, you're just not going to get out of it what's possible.
You know, one of the things that I always tell marketers is that when you begin this path toward revenue marketing, it's not another check in the box on your to-do list. It does become this entirely separate thing, and it's exactly what you said. The people that do it well, you know, at a strategic level, 30 to 40% of the time, they're diagnosing, changing, and auditing, but it is a living, breathing thing. So I think that's a great comment. Let's go back to the beginning when you were when you first came on board at LogLogic, and you mentioned that they really wanted someone who could help them take their demand generation to the next level, but basically they were using their marketing automation system as a batch and blast. So when you came in, what did you do? What kinds of things did you do that got them to the next level?
Sure. So I'm a big believer in data and the ability to segment data. And so I do think a lot of your success with your marketing automation starts with your CRM. If you've got duplicate data or, you know, bad data in your CRM, you know, you're going to get a higher bounce rate on your emails. You're not going to get as accurate deliverability, and it just can be it can be a problem. So I did a couple of things in parallel. I did a fairly comprehensive audit of Eloqua itself to understand, you know, how big is the database, what is our opt-in rate. I looked at deliverability. I looked at the cadence of the emails. I looked at the content of the emails. And then I also, again, at the same time, was looking at Salesforce to understand how Eloqua was talking with Salesforce. Was it optimal? Were we syncing, sort of in the right fashion? I found issues with how Eloqua was talking with Salesforce. I found that we had chosen to, for example, do our lead assignment rules in Eloqua instead of Salesforce for no real reason. And I immediately changed that because lead assignment rules for me made more sense in Salesforce. The way we structure our sales process, it just made a lot more sense to actually manage that within Salesforce. So I did a fairly comprehensive audit of what I consider to be the two critical systems, your marketing automation system and your CRM system, and then I sat down and started to build out a roadmap. I'm a big believer in roadmap. I think it's because I've been in the Silicon Valley for 20 years, and it is kind of an engineering thing, but I built out a roadmap for basically the next 4 quarters. And I looked at, again, the two key systems, marketing automation, in this case, Eloqua. I looked at our CRM system, which in this case is Salesforce.com. And then I looked at two or three other critical pieces that I think are integral in all this, which is, of course, your website and any other applications or sales enablement tools that you're using. In our case, we're using a tool called DemandBase, which is helping us understand website traffic and actually giving us visibility into that. It does integrate with our CRM system, so there's some connection there. And then we also have another tool we're using called LivePerson. This is a chat application that we're using that also feeds into Salesforce.com, and it's augmenting our leads and helping us understand how, you know, live chats are actually feeding into our sales process. So I built out a roadmap for the next 4 quarters, and I set some goals. I set some goals initially with launching a basic lead nurturing program. I'm actually a believer that lead nurturing and lead scoring should go hand in hand. I think that if you're doing lead nurturing, you should also be doing lead scoring. And I also think that if you're doing lead scoring, it should be very tightly integrated with your lead nurturing program. So I set some goals to create a very sort of what I call generic or general lead nurturing track where folks were feeding into a lead nurturing program. Some of the specifics of that program included things like what are the cadence of the emails? What is the content of the emails? How do we determine which leads go into lead nurturing and which leads actually don't? I'm fortunate enough to have a dotted line from our inside sales group, so I have a very, shall I say, strong participation in how they manage leads and how we determine what a marketing qualified lead is versus a sales qualified lead, which is very important to get that squared away, you know, before you even start. So again, the roadmap consisted of let's look at 4 quarters out, let's look at our key systems. What do we want to accomplish over the next 4 quarters? And for me, the first two big things were let's get a basic lead nurturing track squared away and let's get some basic lead scoring squared away.
So, Jenny, let me ask you before we kind of get into some of the details around the lead nurturing and the lead scoring, which you've done a fabulous job with. I want to go back to the roadmap. And first of all, I'm completely fascinated by the idea of a roadmap. What does the document actually look like?
Yeah, it sounds a little more probably complicated than it really is, but it's essentially a chart. I use Microsoft Project, but you can use a Word document. But effectively, what you've got is you've got a calendar of 4 quarters out, and you've got, again, these 4 or 5 critical systems, and you're effectively showing in the roadmap what kind of functionality you expect to see either that quarter or the following quarter. So let me re-explain that here. So again, this is essentially a chart where I've got functionality that either is functionality that I want to build that quarter or I want to make sure that it is launched in some sort of pilot form in tandem with these other systems. So it's very important in the roadmap that you understand the interdependency in some ways of these three systems. So, for example, I wanted to change how we were doing website forms on our website. They were too lengthy. They asked the wrong questions, and I was finding that the data that it was feeding into my Salesforce.com was not data that was either accurate or reflective of the prospect. So one example of a deliverable that I had was to update the forms. On the roadmap, I explained the implications to the website, which was essentially an update in code. I talked about how this affected Salesforce.com, which, of course, showed things like changing fields, changing the lead status, other things for us that are kind of a little bit more unique to our business. And then finally, the Eloqua system. We actually chose to change our forms from Salesforce.com forms. This is where we ended up. We realized, you know what, we should be using Eloqua forms, not Salesforce.com forms. So there was a very tactical, you know, laundry list of items that needed to occur in a particular sequence in order to roll this thing out correctly so that you didn't sort of fix one thing and break another. And so you've really got to be careful on the roadmap how you understand how what you're doing, say, in your CRM system is going to affect your marketing automation system and vice versa.
Absolutely. And I don't think that's something that the new marketer who's just beginning to do this, I think it's a challenge for them to kind of see that end game. But because you have lived it before, you know, this made a lot of sense to you. So let me ask you this. These systems that you had to knit together, the Eloqua, Salesforce.com, of course, your website, DemandBase, Love DemandBase, and also LivePerson Chat, were these tools that were already in place, or did you bring in some of these tools?
No, I brought in DemandBase and LivePerson myself, and I also made the recommendation to do two things. I made the recommendation to migrate the forms and from Salesforce to Eloqua. And again, I think I mentioned earlier to change the lead assignment rules from Eloqua to Salesforce. And so to your point, I had been at previous companies where I had learned kind of the hard way that there are better ways to do these things. And so I was able to come into this company, and given the objectives, I was able to make recommendations on what needed to be in place, what tools we needed in order to meet those objectives. For example, the sales folks wanted visibility into who was visiting the website. They wanted this from an anonymous user standpoint, which is what Demandbase provides. They wanted this in real time, and they wanted to be able to track this. And so my first month here, I brought in Demandbase. It was a no-brainer. It's been on board for a year, and it's probably been one of my most successful, suggestions that I've made. The sales guys love it, and it really brought in some visibility that they just didn't have. The other kind of discussion thread in this is that I felt like Eloqua was not delivering what it could deliver. And so a good example of that is Eloqua can actually send out automatic alerts to sales folks telling them that a lead or a contact that they own is on the website. And we didn't have those alerts set up here. I was very surprised to hear that that had not been turned on. So this was all a consequence of my audit that I did really within the first 30 days of being here. And I felt like there were a lot of bells and whistles that we weren't using from Eloqua that we turned on that really have added to what we're getting out of that tool. And then finally,
I'm sure sending those alerts out was also something that really got sales more tightly aligned with marketing as well, because as a salesperson, who wouldn't want to get that alert?
Yeah, precisely. So I think, the one thing that sort of ultimately sort of was a byproduct of all this was it really did force sales and marketing alignment. There wasn't a lot of that here. I came on board at a time when the marketing team was being rebuilt, and I was very cognizant of the disconnect that was here historically, and I made it, a priority to, work very closely with inside sales and really give them the tools for them to see the benefit of a marketing automation system. And, historically I'd been in companies where, that's a marketing tool. And so my inside sales guys actually have accounts into Eloqua. So if they see a link in a Salesforce.com lead record and they click on it, they can access Eloqua from the link and get a very detailed history of the prospect. They can understand much more granular lead history within an Eloqua report than they can just a Salesforce.com activity report.
Oh, yeah, and that's just magic for a salesperson. That's just absolute magic.
Yeah, they love it. They love it. And then just finally on your last point, Live Person for me was a no-brainer. It's a couple hundred bucks a month. It's another way to have a conversation. I feel like marketing, if you're doing marketing well, you're really enabling the conversation. That's at the end of the day what your job is. Enable the conversation and, provide the right content at the right time and, it'll just happen. You've got to open those doors. And so Live Person, believe it or not, has delivered about $2 million of pipeline. Over the next year, just from conversations that we've had through Live Person. Now, one might argue, that's just another touch point. Absolutely, it's another touch point, and that's the whole point. It allows you to have yet another touch point and another way to have a conversation with the prospect.
So now, who actually is on Live Person? How do you guys use Live Person? Who uses it?
Yeah, we've got a fairly structured schedule. We have 6 inside sales folks, and they are on 2-hour shifts. And so we start at 6 a.m., and we've got somebody on from 6 to 8, and then we have somebody that comes on between 8 to 10. And we have it structured based upon time zones. So, for example, my East Coast guy obviously is going to be on earlier, and then we save, so to speak, the West Coast folks for later in the day. So that's the schedule. We've done some kind of fun bells and whistles with LivePerson. A couple of examples is we've actually canned content so that if somebody is on a web page and they don't want to engage in conversation, but we see, for example, that they're on our page about PCI, we will actually serve up a pop-up that says, something to the effect of, hey, I see you're interested in PCI. Have you read our new white paper that we just announced last week? Click here to read it. So we are leveraging or harnessing the bells and whistles of live person that, again, allow us to deliver content that we know is relevant for them.
Absolutely love that. And how long have you guys been using live person?
I'd say about 9 months.
Wow, and it's already given you guys $2 million of pipeline. That's awesome. And how hard or how easy was it to get the inside sales to agree to participate?
Well, again, I'm fortunate to have a dotted line into inside sales, but, you know, I'm a big fan of getting the inside sales folks in a room and really showing them the value. I try not to just say, hey, guys, we're doing X, and this is how it's going to work. So I like to get them to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit, and then once you do that, you'll find that they're much more receptive to whatever the process is. And so initially, when they heard about this, sure, they weren't, you know, really happy about dedicating 2 hours of their day out of the gate for this. But once they saw the value and once you demonstrated what it can do, these guys are, you know, they can't wait to get on the conversation. We had an inside sales guy just the other day on his 2-hour schedule essentially get a meeting with a Fortune 500 company based upon live person, initial conversation. This guy had never been to our website before. This was his first visit. We served up some canned content, and he essentially asked for a demo.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. Okay. Let's go back to, and again, what I love about your roadmap and your plan, Jenny, is it just makes so much sense, you know, and the best plans are simple, straightforward plans. So just the way you've integrated all the technology pieces. And I know that, again, when you first came into the organization, you had to do some, after your analysis, you had to kind of take a look at how you were going to redo lead nurturing and how you were going to do lead scoring. So tell us about your approach to, let's say, lead scoring first. What was it like when you got there, and what have you done to improve it, and what was that like?
Sure. There really wasn't any lead scoring per se. There was some discussion around what it could be and what it should be, but they hadn't really put a stake in the ground. And that's really the secret with lead scoring. There's no silver bullet here. You've got to basically put a stake in the ground and then, again, watch it. And finesse it. And again, it will change, and it should change. Otherwise, you're probably not doing something right. And so I essentially got together what I like to call your basic sort of lead scoring, 101. We have what I call a blended model here. And so we are actually taking explicit and implicit behavior and blending that into what I call a concatenated formula. It sounds very sort of complicated and fancy, but it's really not, and I'll explain that. We are essentially tracking explicit information, which in lead scoring terms really means what's their title, what company are they coming from, are they a target account, do they have a certain revenue size, and a couple of other sort of, you know, what industry are they from? This is known information. And the lead scoring world, you know, calls this explicit behavior or explicit factors. The other piece of that, of course, is implicit. Implicit factors include things like behavior. What web pages are they visiting? For example, if they come to our products page and they look at certain pages on our website, we want to score that higher than somebody who just comes to the jobs page or somebody that just comes to the home page and doesn't actually, you know, drill down. One other piece of that is how much time are they spending on the site? Obviously, if they're looking, if they've got 10 page views versus 2 page views, that is just another factor. So we built scoring based upon implicit and explicit factors. We are populating this through a numerical and letter score. We've got a sort of ABCD score that we're using for explicit. And we have a numerical score that we're using for implicit. Now, one may say, well, why did you use letter for explicit and why did you use number for implicit? The reason we use that is because explicit is what it is. And it's probably not going to change, right? This is their title. This is their name. This is the company they're from. And so that warrants what we like to call a fairly set score, A, B, C, D, if you will. Implicit is really that score that's going to change over time. Again, this is tracking their behavior. And so by using a numerical value for this, you're able to build on that score. You can add 10 points if they came to the website twice that week. You can take away 5 points if they visited the jobs page. You can add points if they have a certain amount of time on your site. And so the numerical value or the implicit value is really the one that's going to be the organic piece that's going to grow over time. Now, just one final point on that is we are also choosing to, and this is another suggestion I made, is, you know what, I want to know their lead score, but I want to know their raw score. I want to know since day one, what does that number value look like? In other words, I don't just want to know within a certain period of time what their score looks like. I want to know since day one, but when they were an anonymous visitor a year and a half ago, I want to know exactly what they did all the way up until now. And the beauty of Eloqua is it can actually give that for you. If somebody is an anonymous person on your website for 6 months and then all of a sudden they fill out a form or engage in some behavior where you now have their explicit information, it'll correlate that information for you and give you that historical data, which is very, very valuable.
So let me ask you this, because, again, it's so interesting around lead scoring. I did a show last year just on lead scoring alone, and I thought it would be so easy to find all kinds of people to come onto the show. I had a really hard time finding people to come on the show and talk about lead scoring. They either hadn't started it or they didn't feel comfortable with it. So when you built your basic one-on-one model, like how many explicit and how many implicit factors did you originally build into that model?
Yeah, we started with, we did a crawl, walk, run approach, which I'm a big fan of. So, again, we started with, out of the gate, we started with probably 5 explicit factors and 5 implicit factors. And so,
okay.
You know, it starts small, build on it. You may find moving forward that something that you thought was important really isn't that important.
Yep.
And you may find you want to adjust different weights of behavior over time because maybe what you're measuring or how you're measuring it isn't really reflecting, the prospect or where they are in the buying cycle.
Okay. So, Jenny, once you guys put in that basic 101 with the 5 explicit and the 5 implicit, how long did you let that cycle through before you began making changes to it?
We let it cycle through for 1 quarter. And we did that because, again, back to my point about kind of the connection between lead scoring and lead nurturing, is we let that cycle through for 3 months, 1 quarter. And we did that because our lead nurturing cadence is 1 email every 2 weeks. And so 6 emails a quarter. And we wanted to sort of compare apples to apples. And we felt like because a lot of the scoring was happening with our lead nurturing, let's keep those tightly integrated and let's make sure that those are on the same the same page, so to speak. And therefore, we made a decision to, at the end of the quarter, to revisit the nurturing and revisit the scoring and sort of break it down and see how reflective it was of what was happening.
And I would imagine that when you came back to review the lead scoring, one of the first places that you went to was to the inside sales team to see when they were getting those leads from marketing, how qualified they were based on the scores that they were seeing.
We did. I mean, this involved some reports out of Eloqua. This involved some reports out of Salesforce. And this report, this involved some basically getting in a room and talking with these guys. Keep in mind that one thing that I brought to the mix as well, and it's really, I think, working out well and helping sort of everybody involved so that we're not necessarily cutting off our nose to spite our face. What we're doing is we are instituting something called a lead sweep. And what that means is that if a lead comes into Salesforce and the score looks like it's above a certain level, in other words, the lead deserves to go into Salesforce. It's not going to sit in Eloqua and continue to be nurtured. It's actually going to go into Salesforce, and it's going to appear in a lead queue for an inside sales rep. If an inside sales rep does not change that lead status for 5 days, it actually goes back into nurture. And so inherently what we've built in the system is I'm not forcing my inside reps every day or every week to go, this is qualified, this isn't qualified. I'm not forcing them to look at the score and necessarily make that decision. We've determined that based upon lead status, which we obviously have built in, based upon a lead status, if an inside rep does not actually touch that lead in 5 days, from a, just a behavioral standpoint, we've concluded that that lead needs to go back into lead nurture, regardless of the score. And then we adjust the score accordingly.
I love that. I think that's a great idea. And again, this gets back to that integration you have between Eloqua and Salesforce.com, and also the key processes that you've put in place for how a lead should be treated all along the cycle. So I think that's a fabulous idea. I want to come back to something that you said, and that was developing the raw score. So a lot of times when you've got a company and they have marketing automation for a while and then they decide to turn on lead scoring, one of the things that they often will do is just score everybody, you know, from day one and just kind of see what happened. When you did that, Jenny, what did you learn?
Well, I learned that it's just a number at that point, and that until you actually begin to engage with that lead, either through a nurturing program or directly, it's not super reflective. But it's not about the number at that stage of the game. It's about just starting somewhere. Now, what it does enable is it enables you to basically get on the same page with all those leads. And there's value in that. There's value in comparing apples to apples. And so by doing that, you get everybody on the same page, and everybody is sort of starting at the same point. And it's important that you do that.
Okay. All right. Love that. And I think that's a great, great piece of advice. So this was a fabulous discussion around lead scoring. I love the way you've done it. How many iterations have you made to your lead scoring program since you guys turned on the 101?
I would say that we have probably done what I call an audit about 3 times. And, again, we try to do these quarterly. Other things impact this a little bit. We've had some change in messaging, and so that's forced me to go in and update essentially our lead nurturing track. And so we will, in some cases, actually have paused our lead nurturing track in order to update the messaging, and that may push out the cadence a little bit. But I think it's been about 3 times since we've had a full kind of A to Z process that we can sit down and measure and look at.
Okay, excellent. And before we get off this one specific topic of lead scoring, because it's such a hot topic for so many marketers, what's the one piece of advice you give to a marketer who's sitting down and looking at lead scoring for the first time?
I would say, you know what, there's no wrong way to start. You just start with something. And, there's no magic recipe per se. I would say start small. Don't get crazy out of the gate. Start with basic explicit scoring, basic implicit scoring, and build from that. It's too intimidating, I think, for a lot of folks to try and create something that is very, comprehensive and covers all the bases, day one. It's not going to happen, but that's okay. And the important thing is just to start somewhere.
Absolutely. And I always tell people, when you turn on lead scoring, no small animals will be harmed.
Exactly.
Nothing's going to happen to anybody. Okay. Well, let's turn to, I think, the other passion that you have, and that's really around lead nurturing. And kind of tell us what the state of lead nurturing was like when you came in and kind of what you've done to take lead nurturing to the next level.
Sure. Yeah, we weren't doing any lead nurturing here, and part of my interview process was they wanted somebody who had done this before. And I had done this in 2 other marketing automation systems, Marketo and a previous system that I think has been acquired by another company called Market to Lead. So my point there,
by Oracle. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So my point there is that I had done it before. I built it myself in Market to Lead. I built it myself in Marketo. So I understood the tactical mechanics of it, and I had somebody here who could build it for me. And so I was really intrigued by being able to come into a company and taking a step back, knowing that somebody else was going to do the heavy lifting, and it really enabled me to focus on what is the messaging, how do I map the content of what we're going to say in an email cadence that makes sense, that is going to really provide the most relevant experience for my prospects. And so I sat down and I looked at the content that we had. I essentially built what I call a content map, and I recognized that lead nurturing is like dating. And, as a marketer, I get calls probably every day because I go to websites and I download white papers and I, you know, complete forms. And the thing that drives me the craziest is when I'll download a white paper on Monday morning and I get a call from a sales rep 3 hours later. Okay, so obviously my point is that I'm trying to make sure that the content that we're serving up, whether it's a white paper or an analyst report or product demo, is going to be available and, you know, delivered at a time that makes the most sense. It's important to recognize when you're building out your lead nurturing program that, again, it's like dating. There's an inquiry stage. There's sort of a candidate stage. There's this, okay, yeah, I think I do want to date you. Then you kind of get engaged, and then you decide to get married. And these map to real business processes. I personally consider the inquiry stage to be kind of an awareness stage, okay? Let's serve up industry white papers. Let's maybe serve up a case study. You know, there's certain pieces of content that you want to be cognizant of are the right types of content to deliver through email at that particular stage. Okay.
So let me ask you this, Jenny. Do you guys? I want to come back to that. It's like dating, and you're right. It is. It's exactly like dating. So, are you guys in a highly competitive space?
We are. We're in a competitive space with bigger companies that have more budget.
Okay. So, in a highly competitive space, would you nurture and call differently than if you weren't in a very competitive space?
Not necessarily. I think it depends on the space a little bit. What I would probably do if the space was not as competitive is I would probably shorten my lead nurturing cycle. It's not just about the space. It's also about what is your average deal size. So, for example, if I'm selling a $50,000 product, then I'm probably going to recognize that that's probably a 3 to 6 month buying cycle. And therefore, I need to create lead nurturing programs that align with that. If I'm working at Oracle or EMC, I'm probably selling, you know, an average deal size of maybe $500,000. That's going to be a longer sales cycle, and that lead nurturing is going to need to align with that.
Okay. I get questions all the time, and that is, when is the appropriate time for the MQL to get created based on how competitive my space is? And so let me give you an example. And some people have asked me this. They say, we have a very competitive space, and we know that if someone's online, if they're either responding to our campaigns or if they're on our website, they're one click away from a competitor's website as well. And so we feel like we have to reach out to those people quicker than we would if we were in a less competitive space. So how would you respond to that?
I would not necessarily agree with that. I think if you are having the right conversation with them and you're delivering relevant content, depending on where they are, and again, in the buying cycle that you've identified, calling them sooner than later is not necessarily going to be an advantage. In fact, it might actually, you know, burn that bridge.
So you're absolutely right. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay. And do you guys have, did you actually produce a content map?
We did. So 2 points there. We developed a content map, and we also went in and identified what we call buyer personas. What does that mean? That's kind of a buzzword in the last 6 months where we sat down and looked at opportunities that are late stage and closed deals and done some fairly granular reporting on what is a typical marketing profile of these companies or these contacts. In other words, if John Smith at Acme Company bought our product, what is his typical engagement level? What does that look like? How long was he in our system? What kind of content did he download? What kind of engagement did we have with him? And we used that to help build our content map.
So what is your content map actually, how is that kind of laid out? Describe that to the listeners.
Sure. We've got, you know, a Word or Excel document where we've identified the 6 stages of our lead nurturing cycle. Again, in our case, we've got an awareness stage, an interest stage, an education stage, a desire stage, and a purchase stage. Now, the purchase stage is a little misleading because that may be the point where they're really ready to talk to a sales rep. chances are they're probably already talking with the sales rep at that point. But that's fine. We're okay with somebody who is late-stage lead nurturing to talk to a sales rep. We just don't want folks in the early process of the lead nurturing to talk to a rep. My reps don't want to talk to them. Nine times out of ten, they're not ready to have that conversation.
And what a waste of time. I was just talking to Jim Dickey this morning at CSO Insights, and he's coming out with his, I think it's his 15th year in a row straight. And, again, VPs of sales are asking for high-quality leads, which means leads that are ready to be talked to. So, but I only got five. I got awareness. What was your second stage?
Interest.
Interest, and then education, desire.
Right. And then purchase.
Okay, and then what's that? That's one, two, three, four, five.
Awareness is one. Interest is two. Education is three. Desire is four. Yeah, purchase is five. So I take that back.
Perfect.
We've actually cut out the last step of the process recently as a bit of an experiment to see if it is going to impact things at all.
Okay, so again, how simple. You just put together these, you went in and did an assessment, and then you say, here's the stages of lead management, and then you took all the content you had and said, if they're looking at this kind of white paper, they're probably in an awareness stage.
Exactly. We've actually mapped our exact content to each stage. So we've got, for example, a white paper that if you're in the general nurture track, you're going to get this white paper. If you're in our – we've actually got dedicated nurture tracks now that we just launched for two vertical markets that we know are hot for us. We know that they're delivering a lot of business. So for us, there's some tracks around compliance, and we've got some very heavy traffic in the Fed market. So we have some dedicated email messaging and content that we have allocated for those two programs as well.
So let me ask you this question, because, again, this is the kind of detail that marketers just love because, again, they've never done this before. So you take your five stages. Do you ever have a piece of content that is in more than one phase or one stage of lead management?
Not exactly, but I'm a big fan of repackaging content into various different formats. So do we have a white paper in stage one that might appear as a podcast in stage three? Absolutely.
Because clearly someone if you dedicate to downloading a white paper, you can read it anytime. If you dedicate yourself to a podcast, you know you're going to sit there and listen to it. It takes more effort.
Exactly. You've got to package things in different ways for different people. Folks don't absorb information the same way, and quite frankly, they don't want to get information the same way every time.
Absolutely. Completely agree with that. So, Jenny, let me ask you this. You said you guys identified buyer personas. How many personas did you guys come up with?
We've actually got three right now. We started with two, we're at three, and I think we're probably going to have four. I mean, I think what most marketers know today is for some time now, it's not one guy making a decision. It's four or five guys that need to agree on what it is, and it's a much more of a committee sell now. And you've got to be touching typically three or four or five people in order to be successful.
Yep, absolutely. And now, because we only have about 10 minutes left, and I could talk to you forever. You are like the textbook on lead management, Jenny. This is awesome. So let me ask you this. So one of the things you talked about is that you came in and you did a general nurture campaign and you had a cadence, and now you're doing dedicated nurturing by vertical. So tell us more about how you guys do nurturing.
Sure. So I had a strong request from our Fed team because that's a very unique market. There is unique compliance. There's unique messaging. And so we sat down and we built out a dedicated lead nurturing for our federal market. We realized, for example, that we should probably change the cadence. Once a month is probably more palatable for the government market versus, say, the private sector. We revisited the content so that it was relevant for the Fed market. We talked about compliance that was unique to that market, regulations that were unique to that market. Obviously, we're serving up customer case studies that are from the federal market. We're serving up white papers that are going to be more relevant to their pain given the industry that they're in.
So are you to do that, are you creating all new content or are you kind of reshaping some of that content so it has a Fed appeal to it?
I would say both. I think stage one and two for a lot of these different nurturing tracks is going to look and feel the same, because I think you're just building an awareness. I think it's probably 80% of it's going to be the same, but there's going to be 20% roughly that is going to be packaged for that particular market. But as you move later into the nurturing cycle and your prospect moves later into the buying stages, you're going to want to be as relevant as possible. And so it's just a matter of kind of where they are in the buying cycle.
But I just absolutely love that. And so when did you guys launch your specific, your vertical nurturing campaigns?
Yeah, I was really careful on that. I didn't want to launch those too quickly. I wanted to get some time under my belt with our what I call our generic nurture track. So I launched our generic nurture track. I learned lessons. I learned lessons on what content was resonating. I learned some lessons on the scoring. I learned lessons on maybe some of the segmentation we were doing. You know, one key thread in all this is if you're not segmenting your content, a la managing your content in your CRM system, it's really going to impact the success of your nurturing. I can't stress that enough. If you're serving up, you know, content for audience A to content, you know, if you're serving up, you know, content A for some group, and all of a sudden other folks are getting it that aren't part of that group, you're going to turn those people off, and you're going to see an impact in your deliverability, and you're going to see an impact in your open rate, and you're going to see an impact on your scoring.
Okay. Now, I think this is really interesting. Again, this is such a big lesson for every marketer listening. Here's Jenny, years of experience, multiple platforms, been there and done that. But she launched a generic campaign first so she could understand how this particular market would be responding, how her scoring, how her segmentation. There's no way, even with all her experience, she would know how they would respond. So she launched a generic campaign, had many lessons learned from that, and from there she was able to go into specific. Now, I mean, you could have launched specific at the same time and learned lessons as well, but I think that's a great lesson. You're not going to know everything, even if you've done this process before, because each audience is unique and how they respond is going to be unique.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought about launching them together, but the other challenge we had, to be honest, is our CRM system was not in a state where I felt confident that I could segment effectively enough to build a dedicated track for what is going to be a fairly niche market, in this case, Fed. Or in another case, we are targeting the retail industry. I needed to be able to accurately segment within Salesforce if I was going to be, you know, sending six emails a quarter about PCI or how we can help the retail industry. Because the last thing I wanted to do is launch something that was going to turn people off.
Absolutely. So let's take a look at some general things. So on your general nurture, you touch people every 2 weeks. Is that right?
We do. Yep.
And is it the same thing on your vertical?
The Fed market we're touching once a month, and we're doing a fun thing with the PCI retail nurture. We are experimenting with what we call a dynamic process. We're not telling Eloqua to send an email every 2 weeks. We're actually telling Eloqua that if the prospect opens the email within a certain period of time of receiving the email or opens the email at a certain time, go ahead and just serve up the next message.
Love it. I love that. I absolutely love that. What a great idea. Okay. So that would be, serving it up dynamically. Absolutely love that. And then on your compliance email, how often does that go out?
We have two separate compliance tracks. One is compliance for healthcare, which is the HIPAA and high tech. That's actually being served up the same way as our PCI. So I think the point there is the compliance tracks are on this sort of dynamic process because we feel like that if they're opening up emails, you know, within a certain, you know, criteria, that should trigger the next email because there's a definite interest, and to us that is a positive response.
Absolutely. So let's. I have two more buckets of questions, and the first is, since you have been at LogLogic, what kind of metrics have you been able to impact?
Sure. So a few metrics here. I'll start with kind of some of the ones in the weeds. One thing that nurturing has allowed us to do is we've actually increased what we call emailable contacts by 20%. We had a huge database of active and inactive, and my goal here, quite frankly, was to launch a reactivation campaign so that I could get those inactive folks to become active. And so by nurturing them with relevant content, we've been able to increase our emailable contact database by about 20%. As a result of, again, serving up relevant content, we've reduced hard bounces by 30% and reduced unsubscribes by 25%.
Wow.
So what this boils down to us is at the end of the day, the nurturing, we've done some metrics on this. Our nurturing program has touched one out of every three leads that are in our system within the last 6 months. And 30% of the deals that have come through in the last two quarters have been nurtured at least twice. So in other words, they've gone through at least two steps of our six-step or five-step process. And finally, 50% of our pipeline, 50% of our contacts in our pipeline have engaged in some nurturing activity at some point.
That's really awesome. That's really awesome. I'm assuming that sales must be very happy with this.
They are. They're loving it. They only see the upside. So, it can only get better from here. And that's kind of my soapbox is, hey, guys, you think it's good now? Just you wait.
Yeah, just you wait. Absolutely. So, Jenna, you've been doing this for a while. You got to think way back. Think way back until the time when you didn't know about marketing automation and you weren't doing this kind of stuff. Put yourself into a situation of a marketer who's going through a process, and let's say they just acquired a marketing automation system. What advice would you give them?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of now is that there are tools out there that can really help you automate processes and do things that you just couldn't do before. You either couldn't do them or you needed five people to do it or it was very expensive or you couldn't measure it, right? Marketing 5 years ago was this black hole that you just sort of, you tried things and you delivered leads and whether or not they actually impacted revenue was kind of a mystery. So the beauty now is you've got tools that you can use. I heard this the other day. I can't take credit for it, but I'll say that don't forget that these are tools. And, if you give Eddie Van Halen a guitar and you give me the same guitar, Eddie Van Halen's going to sound a lot better than I am, right? It's the same guitar. It's the same tool. But how he's using that tool is very different than how I'm using that tool.
Yeah.
So I think you want to just, keep that in mind and make sure that you kind of take a very sort of crawl, walk, run approach to it because it's just a tool and you need to really just be strategic about it and take your time with it.
Okay. Jenny, you have been absolutely phenomenal. I think everybody got a lead generation 101 lesson today. Absolutely awesome. I love your energy. I love your knowledge and your expertise. I can't thank you enough for being on the show. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Debbie. It's a pleasure.